Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hello, everyone. Now, before we go anywhere, I'd like to apologize for the sound quality on this recording. I could bore you with excuses, but suffice to say that heads will roll and P45s will be issued with total abandon. I'm so sorry that it's not up to our usual standard, but we will be back to normal next month. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Motorsport Commentary behind the scenes for the July 2017 edition of the magazine. I'm Ed Foster, and joining me today is editor Nick Trott, online content assistant Jack Phillips, photographer Lyndon McNeil, and art editor Damon Cogman. Welcome, everyone.
Morning.
Now, before we go anywhere, I think it's worth just having a quick look at the past weekend, where the editorial staff were scattered all over the world watching or competing in motorsport. After a quick round-the-table question this morning before we started, we were at, now remind me if I get anything wrong, the Monaco Grand Prix, the Nürburgring 24 Hours, Lyddon Hill, Silverstone for the World Rallycross launch, Silverstone for the Classic and Sports Car Club Racing, Santa Pod and Brands Hatch. And Simon Aaron is currently on his way to the Isle of Man TT for the first time. Don't think I've missed anything.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's a normal weekend.
Usually and Alton Park.
That's amazing. We've had a weekend where he didn't make Alton Park. What a great weekend of motorsport it was, especially if you were at Silverstone, watching Nick and I drive around relatively gently in the historic racing there. A fun weekend, wasn't it?
Amazing weekend, yeah. It changes your perspective on motor racing when you're there and you are sat in a car, you're surrounded by 50 lunatics all trying to take you out. No, that didn't happen at all. But it was a very, very special thrill. Thanks for letting me share your car.
Not at all.
I didn't break it. Maybe contributed to minor gearbox issue, but I believe there was some bodywork, maybe sort of
reshaped kind of
thing. Should we talk about the July issue of the magazine?
I think we should.
There might have been a small bit of contact. I've never ever made contact with another car in an historic race before, in 12 years of racing historic cars. So it's an awkward moment. And the back marker came out of nowhere when I was in a sort of pack of cars.
Did you apologise to him?
I immediately apologised to him and gave him my contact details and name and everything like that. So he will be giving you a call, Damon.
Ed told it to me. So when we did the driver change, I mentioned this in the office earlier, there was some extraordinary swearing. And I really wanted to know if there was still some oil down at the end of the hanging straight, because there'd been oil down for the majority of the race. So I got nothing useful from Ed, other than a lot of swearing. Beep. And then, of course, he goes up to the guy who he drove into.
No, we made contact. I didn't drive into it. So you made contact. It was a moment of contact.
At the end of the race, Ed walks over to the guy, and Ed, you will have to correct me if I'm wrong, but this is how Ed told the story to me. So the guy was looking pretty angry. But then I think what happened is that he looked at Ed and then looked up and thought, this guy is 6 foot.
Yeah, kept looking up.
But managed to pacify him, he apologised.
I think it's the fact that I went up and apologised so profusely, so quickly, when he had literally just got out of the car, relaxed him somewhat. Because the last time someone knocked into him, they just put their car on a transporter and left. Anyway, let's talk about the July issue of the magazine, shall we? There any free rides gone in a whiff of smoke? Now, front and centre on the cover is the Ford GT40 with Gerhard Berger on board. Inside, there's a 23-page special on the car, including pieces on the 67 Le Mans 24 Hours, the new Ford GT, and Ford's forgotten GT. Before we go anywhere, just to remind everyone, you can buy this issue on the website, motorsportmagazine.com, and you can also subscribe on there. And with that, you get full access to the online archive, which consists of every issue ever printed from 1924 to present. Nick is looking at me expectantly. What have I missed?
Yeah, and you can also buy it in the States, particularly at Barnes & Noble. So there you go.
Excellent. Right, so now, obviously, the new Ford GT road car has been launched. Is that where this sort of cover came from, with the Ford GT40 and the new GT?
Yeah, the planets aligned, really. So Andrew Frankel drove the new Ford GT, probably the most highly anticipated car of the year. And then speaking to Dickie Meaden, our contributing editor, he had this fantastic experience of sharing a GT40 with Gerhard Berger at Spa. And then we started to look around at what Ford GT and GT40 stories weren't necessarily known. And there are a few, so we popped them together. It wasn't an easy package to pull together for this month. In fact, we had another couple of cover options.
We have many options, as we always do.
Yeah, we had cover image options and cover design options and all sorts of stuff. But it just felt like it was the right time, and it's a great story. I think a lot of people have probably seen the qualifying lap that he pulled off in that GT40 at Spa. It's been all over the internet, and two cars narrowed on him.
Yeah, it's quite a squeaky bum moment, isn't it?
Yeah, so it was great to be able to tell that story, and let's face it, who's shared a GT40 at Spa with an F1 legend? So great story.
Absolutely. And I kind of like the fact it's not the obvious choice. Obviously, we could have gone for a Golf GT40 or a more traditional approach, but we've kind of taken a car that was sort of a little bit more obscure and had a bit more of a story to tell.
Fascinating story to tell, yeah. Non-stop racing car. Some of it's quite a grisly story. We won't reveal it all now, but we've covered it all in the issue. So,
lots in there.
Lyndon, you were obviously helping select images for the cover. What were the other options? And why did we go with this one with a sort of Ford GT tilted as if it's going downhill with a glowing brake disc? Yeah. I know that's not the technical term.
It's not. Pointing downhill.
How long have you been doing
this? Well, it is. Look. It is. Tell me that's not pointing downhill.
This is radio. You can't just say, look, it's radio.
We had other options. We would, as you will see in the magazine, we had a modern GT with the original GT40, which we tried to shoot, or we planned to have on the cover, but I think the fact that having Gerhard Berger in the race car was a more dynamic and unusual cover shot. So with the glowing brake discs and it pointing downhill, it kind of gives it a lot more, kind of much more of a dynamic action shot, which we felt grabbed our attention. Yeah. Let's put it that way. So
we sweated over it though, didn't we? I mean, we went and Damon in particular put a load of work into researching some locations at Dagenham where Ford keep their heritage cars, and it's a very industrial kind of it's a cool location, isn't it?
Stepping back into the 70s where and we had a perfect location sorted out with cooling ducts and everything else, and when we turned up to do the shoot, the heavens opened and just didn't play ball. So we were lucky enough to get into one of the railway shelters, and it just didn't give the feel that we really wanted for the cover. So seeing that after we'd laid everything out and looking at pictures side by side and on the walls and getting everybody's opinion, it was ultimately we came down to the action shot, which really shows it off.
Damon, the covers are quite a collaborative effort, because obviously you and Nick sit down and kind of map them out along with Lyndon as well, but they do all then go up on the wall.
They do.
And there's sometimes a selection of even six or seven with sort of similar images, but just small tweaks that the lesser mortals like me don't really notice.
I mean, it can be a long and torturous process, or it can just happen. It's never a kind of an instant thing. We find we have a, for the best laid plans, particularly on this one, the best laid plans sort of went out the window, and we went for the better cover in the end. So we go through a process sometimes that can be quite difficult with lots of options, and people have very different options and different ideas. With this one, it was actually relatively, even though we had many options, everyone went and pointed at exactly the same one on the wall, and amongst all the others, everyone went that one, and that was how it was deemed by a collaborative effort. But it's not, having said that, it's not always quite as straightforward as that. Everyone usually has their own favourites, and we have to have a little battle, but it's usually it's all part of the fun.
The hardest thing is actually trying to detach yourself from what you had planned to do originally. I think this is my 96th or 7th cover that I've been in.
Who's counting? Who's counting?
Obviously, the majority of what I've learned from that is that there does come a point where you just have to
switch off and you just have to say your original plan, it doesn't, it's not working. And instead of trying to crowbar it or try to, you know, change the positioning of the cars or try and add a treatment on it, on the image on Photoshop, or move the text or the colours or anything, you just have to go, do you know what, it doesn't
yeah.
work.
It's not right.
So you have to kind of start again. But that image with the glow and brake disc gear hard, and that light that's on the car, I mean, it's unconventional. We appreciate it's an unconventional cover, but hopefully...
It worked for me. As soon as I saw it laid out with the text on it, I'm just gutted I didn't shoot it.
Some of the photos you did shoot that you were mentioning earlier were taken on an industrial unit, but in the sort of works and words of Marks and Spencers, it wasn't any industrial unit. Just talk us through, because you mentioned there that obviously it rained and you had to go inside.
It did, yeah.
It wasn't an easy day from start to finish, was it?
Well, I was there the day before, so luckily enough, a couple of emails and phone calls to the Ford Heritage and Classics department, and they thankfully let us in to have a wander around the day before to see where we wanted to shoot. So there's lots of images, you know, phone images sent back to Damon going, look at this, we can shoot here. And again, another collaborative to work out where we wanted to shoot. It wasn't just any
the original plan was to actually use the cooling towers at Dagenham, which are quite famous amongst the car world, and especially the Ford enthusiasts. It's quite an iconic sort of part of the old Dagenham site, have now long gone, so that site has now been sort of still stripped of all of its iconic bits, so there's very few bits left from that period. There's the occasional blue wall, but that's about it these days. So
the glamour of motor racing.
Calling
towers in Dagenham. Yeah. Exactly. Not what you signed up for, is it?
Well, at least I stayed dry. That was the main thing.
Now, it's probably worth mentioning that Jack Phillips, who's joining us for the first time today, is also plugged into all the audio equipment, furiously making sure that you can hear us. So if there are any problems with the sound, his email is jack. But Jack, you also played a little bit of a part in this sort of Ford set of features, and you spoke to Baz Leinders, didn't you? Over lasagna, sat on the floor somewhere.
Yes, it took a while to track him down, and then I noticed a man sat with a plate of lasagna, and he looked a lot like Baz Leinders.
So. Whereabouts did you find him?
This was in the back of the Strachan garage at the Blancpain Endurance Round.
Yeah.
And he was happy for me to bother him during his lunch.
Proper journalism, that is.
Yeah. I would be furious.
He smelled the food.
It was the third lunch I'd interrupted that day. I won't do it again. But he talked about the Ford GT of the mid-2000s, which is often forgotten. It was actually more successful than most people realise. And it still does look good, I think. I think it looks great as a GT. And it's obviously a GT. So he was talking about how they bought it and the background of the car, because its lifetime was only about 2 or 3 years. But it still won the GT1 World Championship. It still won Spa 24.
Is that the one that Grosjean raced?
Yes, so it's Grosjean, Machiavecchi.
Kind of got him back in the shop window as well, didn't it, for Grosjean? He brought him back to the sort of back into sort of race-winning position.
Yes. So he'd had his tough time at Renault and then won the first GT1 World Championship race, which is pretty good. And then then he got back into Formula 1, GP2, won GP2, and then off he went. And Mark BDS then had to stop because the guy who created the car then unfortunately died, and that was the end of that very brief, short Ford story. It wasn't supposed to be a race car, but they turned it into one, and then they did, especially when it took Ford back to Le Mans without actually Ford being involved. So
I remember seeing it. I mean, it was a hell of a incredibly dramatic, wonderful noise, just looked great on the track. And I'd love to at some point dive into the win ratio of that car, because I'm sure it's super impressive.
Yeah.
Did you not do that for the feature, Jack?
I didn't have space.
Interrupting people.
Yeah.
I was just looking for lasagna.
Now, without giving too much away, Nick, Andrew's tested the new GT, the much anticipated GT. Does he like it? How does he get on with it?
I can't tell you how much anticipation there is around this car.
There's page 114 for those with a magazine in front of them.
Good Lord, they teased this car, haven't they? I mean, I believe Jack will be able to, our sports car expert will be able to confirm that obviously the race car race car race before the road car was available, yes. And they had dispensation, I believe, in order yes. to tell
it was contentious. Yes, to say. He was doing effectively the GT racing backwards. So instead of taking a road car and once homologated, then turning it into a race car, they did it backwards. So they wanted this race car, and then they designed the race car and then made a road car livable out of that race car.
Yeah.
Which I think Frank recovers.
Yeah.
And so that made it has a bit of a reputation of being not well universally liked because of that, because it was against the spirit of GT racing.
All the other teams were very cross, weren't
yes.
they?
Yeah. Le Mans didn't help.
Probably winning their class at Le Mans was yeah. probably didn't help.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there was the claims of sandbagging and it's had a troubled.
That's what we were doing this weekend, though. We were sandbagging. Yeah.
I'm very good at sandbagging. Very good. The car, the road car, I mean, it's a fabulously dramatic car, a kind of out Lamborghini, you know. I think what's interesting about this as a road car is that it actually does, in a way, its story does reflect the GT40 race car. I mean, this has no compromises. Modern supercars are really, really easy to drive. You know, they've got great steering, visibility is really good, there's loads of, they've got cup holders, air conditioning, you know, everything about the cars are just easy to drive, which is fabulously easy to drive. Ford have come along with something that is really tight cabin because they wanted to narrow the cockpit area aerodynamics. It's got a race mode that drops it about an inch off the ground. This is a race car for the road. So a lot of manufacturers talk about a race car for the road these days, but I would say Ford can say it proudly. This is a true race car for the road.
And it is £500,000. It's £500,000 though, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like double the price of all of its rivals. You know, McLaren.
But they sold out though, aren't they?
Sold out. It's probably worth $1 million.
Should have charged double.
It'll be worth $1 million. So we'll drive this. We'll drive this again in Europe, and I'd like to do a proper track video on it with Andrew and Dickie and maybe a few others. It'd be a great car to experience. So come along, Ed. It's much like an MGB to drive.
Can I have a go, please? Look at me like
should
that.
Should we move on a little bit? Just before we go on to a big feature from Mark Hughes, I just for the Le Mans lovers out there, it's on the Motorsport Shop. There is actually a bookazine called Le Mans in Focus, which is an amazing selection of rare and sort of unseen images. Damon, you helped put it together, and it's packed full of amazing images, isn't it?
It is. It's a wonderful coffee table experience for all of you with people with coffee tables. It's the perfect addition. It's just an indulgent, lovely world of loveliness. Yeah. What can I say?
I introduced Damon as the art editor. I got that a bit wrong. He's actually marketing director as well. beautifully phrased. It's worth mentioning the digital version has over 120 minutes of video footage on it as well. So have a look at motorsportmagazine.com and that's /LM for Mother in Focus. It's worth having a look. Right, something I quite wanted to talk about was a large 24-page precision special. Nick, tell us more.
Yeah, so there is synergy between watches and cars. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I think, in fact, there's a lovely story about... in fact, Damon, you tell us the
story. It's actually an interesting story about how the Rolex Daytona legend came about. I don't want to give away all of it, but in amongst all the pictures of watches, there is some lovely features, and one of which is how the story of Malcolm Campbell used to drive his salt flat land speed record attempts wearing a Rolex. Part of the Daytona legend comes from Sir Malcolm Campbell, from his time in the 30s when he was setting the world alight with daring do attempts.
I think it's probably worth saying as well that we know that some people often write in and ask us about the watch content and whether it substitutes car content. That's not the case at all with this precision supplement. This is a 220-page issue. All the features are there. In fact, often when we get a special like the precision supplement, we can upsize the issue. We get more editorial pages. So that, again, in the spirit of the kind of the behind the scenes aspect of this podcast, that's how this all comes together. And of course, you know, we do acknowledge that there's we generate income from this. You know, the watch advertising helps go some way towards paying Lyndon's enormous salary.
It's expensive,
yeah. So, but it's fun. Enjoy it. You know, read it. It's some great stuff in there. And so it doesn't substitute any features. So all's good.
Yep, all on top of. So you're getting extra.
Right, well, turning to page 118, we've got a really fascinating interview with Helmut Marko, and the headline's lovely. It's actually a quote from Helmut saying, "Talent, that's not enough. They need to be desperate." He's obviously talking about the Red Bull Young Driver Programme, which he heads up. And Mark sort of unearthed some of the truths behind it, because I think we've all in the office have always found it quite strange when some drivers are dropped who are particularly good, others are brought on that don't particularly have a great track record. Damon, if you wanted to get onto the Red Bull Young Driver Programme, you need to read this, don't you? Because it actually
absolutely.
Gives away all the
trade secrets, absolutely. Well, Marko is he's almost like the pantomime villain of the F1 paddock these days. He's sort of got his reputation as being this evil sort of man that sort of ruins careers of young drivers. But the reality is he's been at the forefront of driver training and driver programmes in the Red Bull situation for many years now, and you can't fault his track record when you look at Sebastian Vettel and all the other people that have sort of since been. You can keep on going. Of course, there have been casualties of that. You know, you could look at Alguersuari and Buemi, who have not done much wrong. But interestingly, in the feature, again, don't want to give too much away, but interestingly, in the feature, he does talk about Buemi as being a kind of maybe one that maybe got away. And maybe if it was a different time and a different place, he wouldn't have been sort of removed away from the programme. I think it's interesting to note that Buemi's now still part of the Red Bull driver programme. He turns up, he does events, he does driver training, he's very much involved in the Red Bull world, so I've got a feeling he's still, you know, maybe his time will come again, maybe he will come back around.
He's a world champion,
yes. He can't stop winning in Formula E at the moment, but yeah, it's a fascinating insight into a guy that you probably don't know too much about, to be honest. You can sort of see the headlines from him, but yeah, he's a complex guy.
Yeah, it's a great story, isn't it?
Yeah. It's just one of those tiny little nuggets. I know we're not supposed to be giving things away in this, but he's talking about signing an American driver who was going from Graz to Munich, and Helmut told him to stop at Salzburg, and this American driver said, "Salzburg? What's in Salzburg?" And Helmut replied, "Mozart." And this American driver had no idea who he was talking about. And Helmut said, "Unbelievable. If I was going to Red Bull to talk about a contract, I'd make sure I knew all about the place." Mm-hmm. Which just, you know, it's incredible. If you want to be a young driver in the Red Bull programme, you need to know about classical music as well as Apex's.
It's not just about going fast, is
yeah,
it?
Yeah, exactly.
I think what Mark's done in this interview, it's a brilliantly done interview. I think he's suggesting, or he's kind of revealing, I guess, where the power is at Red Bull, isn't it? I mean, we don't see much of the boss, Dieter.
No.
It's hard to gauge where Christian Horner sits in the power struggle or the power leagues at Red Bull. But when you look at this interview, when you read this interview, you do get the sense that when Marko says jump, people do say jump.
Yeah. Well, I think it's also interesting. He doesn't actually have a job title. Marco's role is completely arbitrary.
He reports to no one.
Yeah, not even Dieter, is it? And ultimately, he's paid by the Red Bull Corporation, but ultimately, he has no official role. Which I find is fascinating in a kind of in a competitive global world like this.
It's rather refreshing.
How do you think he would appraise our driving, Ed? Do you think we've got a chance on the Red Bull programme?
I think the jury would be out. I'm not saying no. Yeah. You know, we didn't come last, and we were keen.
Mm. And I know who Mozart is. Do you?
Yep.
Is that Dave Mozart?
I think I did. Oh my goodness.
Second in class. Out of two is technically last.
Jack, this audio better be pretty special. Let's move on to our lunch with, which is obviously our monthly feature. This starts on 1-2-4. Now, Matt Oxley caught up with King Kenny Roberts over the Grand Prix weekend in Austin, Texas, early this year. Nick, how has it taken us so long to have lunch with the King, or, well, the second King after Petty as well?
What are you asking me? I've only been here 5 months.
I know. 5 months? It's quite a long time. It's long overdue, isn't it?
Yeah, it is overdue, yeah. I mean, this is a superstar. I mean, who would be the equivalent of Kenny Roberts in F1? He's a guy who's dominated the sport, changed the way that people drive cars. I mean, you know, he's a Schumacher, he's a Senna.
He's kind of everyone rolled into one, isn't he?
Yeah, with that kind of tirelessness that you get with all the greats. Matt Oxley pulled a blinder, basically. He mentioned it earlier in the year when I cast the net, asked all the contributors, who should we lunch with? Matt said, we've got to do Kenny. I love bikes. Certainly agreed with that. And then when the MotoGP circus went to Circuit of America, Matt suggested to Kenny, should we sit down, do a lunch with? And he was more than happy to. Great story, great photography, some wonderful, absolutely wonderful archive photography in here, and Damon being pat on the back, and Lyndon as well.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
Lyndon's now obviously paid so much that we should stop thanking Lyndon.
But a wonderful piece.
Yeah. Where are these photos from? Are they?
We were lucky. I mean, I got in touch with the AMA in America and asked them if they had any archive of Kenny dirt racing, and luckily they came back to us with some nice shots that said they were more than happy for us to promote them with. And yeah, so we lucked in with that one.
Yeah, no, they're really good. Great images. Turning to 136, Simon and Linda went off to see a battered Lola 270.
A very beautiful
Lola 270 that's been sort of restored to its former glory. Obviously, Linda, you're in charge of photographs on this one.
Yeah.
It's quite a different sort of feel to it because the Lola's stripped down. It's very much in a sort of very clean, pristine workshop.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't, until I'd seen Simon's photos of the actual crash, I didn't really know what I was dealing with. And then I saw the photos beforehand and just thought, how can anyone not walk away, but get away with so little injuries from this car? And then we turned up to CMS in Kimbolton, where they run the car. And to see the car in such a pristine, like you say, workshop area, and ready for us to photograph, and how it had been rebuilt was just incredible. So we treated it with a kind of an undressed shoot, shall we say, so you could see what had been damaged and how it had been rebuilt, and how it has been rebuilt is just incredible, from being virtually bananaed to now racing again, and in pretty much original form as well. I mean, there were bits of bodywork that were up in the shelves that are obviously kind of a little kind of memento of the day, shall we say, but to see how it has been all put back together is just a testament to the guys at CMS and what they've done.
Yeah.
There's real artistry, and I think that's what, you know, that's the approach that we've taken to the thing, and we wanted to reflect in the photography, the artistry, the work that goes into keeping these cars alive, you know, the cars that we love, you know, they're very, very important cars, and I think the treatment is suitably reverential. And we are carrying this as a kind of a regular story now, so that pretty much in every issue there'll be a piece about a restoration or a workshop or...
Obviously, they don't have to go into the tyre wall quite so hard.
I would recommend, not breaking the car.
I know there's an MGB that could probably feature in the next issue.
But it's going to be regular. We're going to be focusing a lot on these wonderful engineers who put these cars back together again. And another great story from the team.
Nick, I'm actually going to come straight back to you for the next feature. I'm not going to give it too much of an introduction because I know you're such a fan. Mr. Tamiya. It's right up your street, this, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I do struggle to contain my admiration and respect for Mr. Tamiya. So this is the hopefully our readers will be aware of the Tamiya plastic model company. It's an incredible success story, and the man who Mr. Tamiya himself is a lovely guy. He's still at the head of the company. I went to Nuremberg to the big toy fair to meet him. I did meet him once before, 10 or so years ago. I wanted to meet him again. It was the 50th consecutive year that they'd been at the toy fair, and there were rumours going around that would be the last time he'd be in Europe. And to me, he's an absolute hero. Him and my dad, I would say, are the two people responsible for my love of cars. My dad, because he took me to Brandtatt pretty much every weekend, and I loved it. Mr. Tamiya, because I learned about cars from making his models and his radio-controlled cars. And the wonderful detail in the cars. You know, you learn about coil sprung suspension, you learn about differentials, you learn about ball joints, rose joints, everything from Tamiya kits. And he's an Enzo Ferrari, you know. Like, we talked about who would be Kenny Roberts' equivalent just now. I mean, Mr. Tamiya is Enzo Ferrari in the model world, you know. So, and he's the loveliest, humblest man. He's just a really lovely guy. And I rather embarrassingly took... When I was a kid, I used to cover my school books in Tamiya catalogues, and I found something loft.
Oh my goodness, so, I can see where this is going.
So I found a BNC on paying
therapy. No wonder he's not ever coming back to the toy model fair again.
142, you can see Mr. Tamiya is holding, he's actually holding one of my school books that I put in a Tamiya catalogue. But he was, funny thing, he looked at this, and then he went straight inside to look at the school books, and I was thinking, oh no, I was really bad at that. Mark
Wayne. Oh my goodness!
But a lovely, charming, gracious man, and the story written by Marcus Nichols is a great story. It tells the story of Mr. Tamiya's life, and if you love cars and you love engineering and you love the business and the passion of motor racing, you must read this. It's a fantastic job. I could go on, but I bet.
As an aside, this very last weekend, I was actually building a Tamiya.
Yeah,
I built a BMW 635 CSI this last weekend for our deputy editor. He's just bought himself a 635 CSI, and I thought it'd be a nice touch. Simon Aaron had an old Schnitzer one in his loft, and he brought it down to sort of give to me to make. So I've built a Gordon Cruikshank spec BMW 635 to me a model of the weekend.
Excellent.
To give to him. Let's cheer him up.
Good stuff. Right, so we're on. We sort of haven't got too much time left, but I did just want to talk about the last big feature in the issue, which is 40 years of Donington Park. Since its rebirth, Gordon went to Donington Park and sort of met everyone there. Damon, Donington's had a sort of a torrid time over those 40 years, isn't it?
Huge
highs, but some really big lows as well. So it's a miracle that it's kind of here, still working.
It's amazing it's still with us, isn't it? Let's be honest. It's had a sort of tricky start, and it's had a tricky life over its. And hopefully, Jack, is the deal gone? Has the deal gone through yet? With
I think there are still I's to dot and T's to cross.
Right.
Just for everyone listening, this is for MSV, Jonathan Palmer's sort of circuit company buying Donington Park.
Yes, I believe it's a done deal, effectively. I know. Yeah. Well, last time I had an email from their press officer, it said part of MSV Group. How much you can read into that, I don't know. But
and it's had a tricky life, but it looks, hopefully, fingers crossed, it's going to have a secure future now with Jonathan getting involved and MSV being part of that family. Hopefully it'll be a secured future, but the history, crikey, what history has been there? I mean, everything from the war efforts to the famous 1930s Silver Arrows to F2 to Senna's 93 race. I mean, you could go on. It's had so many amazing highlights over the years. Unfortunately, it had some terrible sort of low lights with changes of ownership and digging the track up. We were very, very close for it to not being ever being here again. So we're very lucky it's still with us. But yeah, the 40 years have been a very
roller coaster ride,
a hell of a roller coaster, yeah. Definitely.
Linda, am I right in thinking that Donington's quite a good place to take photographs at because it's kind of so recognisable?
You obviously Crane of Curves, everybody knows that, and the last chicane, but it's got the undulation as well, so it makes it nice to get different angles that you don't normally get at such of the old airfield circuits.
Yeah. I can imagine Silverstone's quite a difficult one.
It's slightly, yeah.
Is that why you weren't there on the weekend for us?
For you, I wasn't,
yeah,
no.
Yeah, okay.
Interesting. Excuse me, that we told this story through the eyes of some of the people that know the circuit the best and certainly have known it over the last 40 years and it was rejuvenated. And that was, we sat down in the office, Gordon and I and a few others, we looked at how we would approach this story and we just thought, you know what, let's hear it from their own words.
Yeah.
So I think it worked really well. Gordon's done a great job pulling it together.
Yeah. Now, there's obviously loads more content in the issue that we haven't discussed, including the news, obituaries, Mark's Grand Prix notebook, other columns from Dickie Meaden, Gordon Cruickshank, Simon Ann, Richard Williams, Doug Nye, just to name a few. Road cars with a full road test of McLaren's new 720S and, of course, Private View. Just a reminder, you can buy this issue on the website, motorsportmagazine.com, and you can also subscribe on there. You'll get it delivered to your door before you can buy it on the newsstands, and even if you live in some of the remotest parts of the world, you can read the digital edition the day it's released. Thank you all so much for listening and for buying the magazine. Do keep in touch via email, social media, and even typed letter that we still get in the office occasionally. The office address is on the website. See you all next.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This month, and thank you for listening.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.